Okay, good evening, everybody. I know this isn't my normal slot, but we couldn't find anyone better tonight, so, or worse for that matter. We just couldn't find anyone tonight, so you're stuck with me. So I wasn't sure what to talk about, so Daniel Gopin said we should talk about Eretz Yisrael. Yeah? So you win. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about Eretz Yisrael tonight, and particularly I want to share with you we probably won't get through the whole thing. In fact, I'm pretty certain we won't get through the whole thing. But I want to share with you the piece that Rav Shechter wrote in Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon about Medinas Yisrael, the current Medina that we have in Eretz Yisrael, and the status of the Melchamos and the status of the Medina itself. And in this piece, I feel it's very important because Rav Shechter deals with a lot of the very important questions that we ask, and that maybe sometimes we're not so familiar with the answers to. Like, for example, there is a halacha in Torah, in Kol HaTorah Kula, that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Kol HaTorah Kula, that even to save one life, look what we did, the lengths we went to during Corona, not to daven with a minyan for months on end, just to be able to save lives. So we know that unfortunately, all the time in Eretz Yisrael, there are people that die defending the Medina. So if that's the case, why don't we say Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Kol HaTorah Kula? We should pack our bags, let the Palestinians take over, and say, we'll live happily in America or wherever else. Because Pikuach Nefesh is Doche everything. When they say, we're going to keep carrying out terror attacks unless you give us the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, we should give them the West Bank and Gaza Strip. And if they say they want Tel Aviv, or they'll keep carrying out terror attacks, so then give them Tel Aviv, because after all, Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Kol HaTorah Kula. Or, for example, the question of can we reasonably call the current Medina Aschalta de Geula, the beginning, or the Reishis Tzmichas Geula Seinu, the beginning of Geula? What does that phrase even mean, Aschalta de Geula? Is that a halachic concept, or is that just something that somebody who wears sandals made up? Meaning, is that a real thing that's called Aschalta de Geula? Is there any nafkamina la halacha for something to have the name, to have the title Aschalta de Geula? Or, for example, he deals with how can we know, how can anyone say with confidence that this is the beginning of Geula? Meaning, even if this is a potential Geula, and you want to daven Shetehe Reishis Michas Geula Seinu, let it be, but can anyone say with confidence that I know for sure that this is the beginning of Geula? We're not Nevi'im. How can anyone have the audacity to suggest that they know that this is the beginning of Geula? Also, isn't the entire enterprise of having a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael a violation of a Shavua Chamura that's mentioned at the end of Maseches Ksubos, where the Gemara tells us that Gimel Shavuos, there are three Shavuos that Ishtabu Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with the Bria, with all of humanity, and one of them is Shelo Yalu B'choma, that we're not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael by force and take over the land until the time of Mashiach? And look what we did in 1948. We took back the land, and Mashiach's not here yet. It was obviously not the time of Mashiach, and we did it anyway. So isn't the whole thing, shouldn't we just, again, pack up our bags? The whole thing is against the halacha. It's against the Gimel Shavuos. Or another question, can a non-from government possibly be agents for Geula, people who want to destroy the Torah u'mitzvos, people who have at best no interest in the furtherance of Torah u'mitzvos, as many of the governments, the Israeli government changes a lot, there's an election every other day, but as many of the governments throughout the history of Israel have been, can you call that a Malchus Yisrael? I mean, how do you call that a Jewish government when there's nothing Jewish about them other than the fact that they are halachically Jewish, but nothing in terms of attitudinally is Jewish? And who gives us a right to establish a Yom Tov, that all of a sudden we made up a holiday and we call it Yom HaAtzmaut? Are we allowed to do that? Well, isn't that Baltosif? You're allowed to just make up holidays and give it whatever name you want to give it and make up your own rituals for all those holidays? So is there such a thing? So, I would just caution, don't leave yet. Those questions all have answers. So we might not get to all of the answers tonight, but I do think it's important that people who grew up let's say, for lack of a better term, the modern Orthodox, centrist Orthodox, religious Zionist community should at least have some idea of what your own hashkafe is, other than I'm not as frum as the other people. Meaning it's not that, I remember like how jarring it was for me when I met Rav Schachter, because here was like the biggest Zionist I ever met, and he seemed like really frum. Like he seemed frummer than almost anybody else I knew. So like I didn't get it, because I was always under the impression that if you're really frum, then you must not be such a Zionist, because Zionism is like not so frum. So I didn't really chop what was going on. So it's important to know like what our own hashkafa is. A lot of times we have no idea. We just know what we're supposed to feel, but we don't know what we actually believe or what we actually think. Sometimes it's important to not only feel but to think. It's also important to to have well-reasoned positions on things, or at least understand what our positions are based on. So obviously, if you speak to 100 Jews about these topics, you'll get 100 different opinions. But I would guess that there are a few that are more informed than Rav Schachter's opinion. Meaning, I would guess out of 100 Jews, he's in the 99th percentile, right? Meaning, in terms of educated. So I thought that it would be worthwhile to share with you, and you could take a look on your own. Because, as I said, we're not going to get through the whole thing, but I'm going to go through it. I'm not going to like summarize. I'm going to go through piece by, line by line, pretty much. I'm not going to read it inside, but I'm going to go through line by line, pretty much. Simon Lamed Beis and Sefer Be'ikve Atzon, which is Rav Schachter's second Sefer. As you probably know, his first Sefer is called Eretz HaTzvi, starts with an Aleph. His second Sefer is Be'ikve Hatzon, starts with the Beis. His third Sefer is Ginas Egos, starts with a Gimel. So Halavai, he should get to Tuf and then go around again. But let's go through the piece. There is a Gemara in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and Chizkiyahu HaMelech did six major things. Three of them the Chachamim were moded to, thought it were a good idea. Three of them the Chachamim were unhappy about. One of the things that he did that Lo Hodu Lo, that the Chachamim were unhappy with him about, is Kitzetz the Losos Shal Heichal. He took down the doors of the Heichal, and he sent it as a gift to the Melech, as a bribe to Melech Ashur, to leave them alone, to leave the Jewish people alone, not to attack. So he took the doors of the Heichal itself and sent it to the Melech Ashur. V'lo hodilo. And the Chum were very unhappy with him about it. Couldn't think of a different gift. That's what he had to do. Cut down the Dlasos HaHeichal. So Rashi writes, what was so bad about this? Because he should have trusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, V'ganosi ala yirazos lohoshia. Hashem said, Hashem gave a haftacha that he's going to protect the city and that he's going to save the city. So for Chizkiyahu HaMelech not to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to think that he has to start pulling pieces off of the Beis HaMikdash in order to save the city is a fundamental lack of bitachon, because there was a direct promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What the implication of Rashi is that what if Hashem didn't give a direct promise and you were just faced with an enemy that was going to attack, or you can pull apart the Mikdash, take down, destroy the Mikdash yourself, that otherwise it would have been the proper thing to do, the proper course of behavior, to actually take off the doors of the Heichal in order to keep the enemy at bay. And that makes a lot of sense, because there are only three mitzvahs in the Torah that are Yaharig Val Yavar and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and Binyan HaMikdash are not among them. Binyan HaMikdash, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael are not Yaharig Val Yavar. So if they're threatening to kill us, so yeah, it's Mavur from that Gemara that you would pull apart the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, there are those that wanted a Taina that if the Palestinians want Yehuda v'Shomron, and they say that we're going to keep carrying out terror attacks until you give it to us, we should just give it to them, because it's not a violation of Lo Sechanim, or maybe it is a violation of Lo Sechanim, of not giving them Chaniya Bekarka, not giving them Eretz Yisrael. But so what? It's Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Lo Sechanim. So for Pikuach Nefesh, you should be allowed to do, we should be mevater on anything, on everything, on all of the Medina, but certainly on major portions of the Medina unless you have a particular haftacha from a Navi like Chizkiyahu HaMelech had. We don't have a particular haftacha from a Navi, and therefore maybe there are those that claim, there are those that believe that to save a single life, if the assessment is that it will in fact save lives, which is a big if, but if the assessment is that that by leaving Gush Katif you're going to save all these lives and that the attacks are going to stop, which again, you know, big if, but if that's the assessment, a single life is worth everything. So Rav Shechter says that that is not correct. And the reason it's not correct is min chaschinuch writes in mitzvah tav chav dalid that the din of pikuach nefesh being docha kala tarukula is dafka shalom b'shas milchama. But whenever you're dealing with a shas milchama, whenever you're dealing with a time of war, we would never say pikuach nefesh is docha kala tarukula, because by that definition, we would never be able to have such a concept called war, right? By definition, war always involves casualties. You cannot say that we have such a thing called the Milchemes HaRashos, and we have such a thing called the Milchemes Mitzvah, but that's only if no one's life is going to be at risk at the Milchama. There's no such thing as nobody's life being at risk at a time of Milchama. So you can't say even a suffix sakana of one chayal is going to be docha the entire mitzvah's Milchama. No, it's a davar barur that b'shas Milchama, there's no din of pikuach nefesh. And then the Tziv writes this in his chidushim to Maseches Kiddushin, in the chidushei agriz to the Haftorah of Parshas B'Shalach, on the pasuk about Zvulun, also says something similar, that this is a davar pashut. That certainly we're not going to say pikuach nefesh, the normal parameters of pikuach nefesh, when it comes to a shas milchama. So you might say, well, who's talking about milchama? We're talking about Eretz Yisrael right now. There's no war going on in Israel right now. There was a war in 1967. There was a war in 1948. There was a war, there was the Yom Kippur War. There have been wars, but there's no war going on right now. So Rav Shechter points out that that is not true. That the Medina, from its very inception, has been in a time of war, and he said no less an authority than Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky paskin that halacha lemaisa in a very, very sensitive situation. In the year Tavshin Lamed, in the summertime, there was it was a Shas Shalom. Technically, it was between one war and the other, and a number of terrorists, a number of Arab terrorists, hijacked two airplanes full of Jewish people, tourists that were traveling back from Eretz Israel to America, and they brought them to Jordan, and they threatened to kill all of them. And among the captives, the most famous of the captives, for at least for yeshiva people, was Rav Huttner, right? Gaon Rav Yitzchak Huttner Zatzal, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. So one of the wealthy Talmidim of Rav Huttner came up with a plan that he was going to raise millions of dollars. He was going to bring it to the foreign minister of the United States of America, or to the whatever the office would be in Washington that deals with these kinds of high-stakes situations. And he would say, here, I raised millions of dollars, please give it to the terrorists so that they can give me my Rebbe back. Meaning, it's an exchange. I'll give you $10 million, I want Rav Huttner back. And that was the proposal. So the Rabbanim were discussing at that time whether that's halachically permissible. Because the Mishnah Maseches Gittin says, in Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph, Maseches Gittin, that you're not allowed to be poda a shavu yoser al kadei demayhem. That it used to be apparently a fairly common thing, that people were taken captive, and you're allowed, and there's a mitzvah called Pidyon Shvuyim, to redeem a captive, but you're only allowed to pay up until his value to redeem him. If they're demanding an unreasonable price for the captive, the halacha is you're not allowed to pay an unreasonable price for the captive. Why not? What's the svara? Why can't you pay an unreasonable price for him? Because they'll do it again. It will just encourage this behavior. So Tosos over there says, however, if you have a captive who is a muflag b'chachma, who is an extremely brilliant person, a major Talmud Chacham, then you could be poda yoser mikidei damav. And this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch in Yardeas and Reishon and Beisiv Dalin. So a number of the Rabbanim said, you want to find someone, we don't know what the category of muflag b'chachma means, how brilliant you have to be a muflag b'chachma. So a number of the Rabbanim said, Rav Huttner probably fits the bill. I mean, he's there aren't many like him, so probably he would qualify. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Levracha, at the time said that the whole cheshbon is based on a false pretense. It's based on a false premise. The whole din of Pidyon Shvuyim is only b'shas shalom. But b'shas milchama, you cannot say that you would stop fighting a war and provide funds to the enemy that will only help them in their war effort in order to be poda a captive. That's a non-starter when it comes to a shas milchama. But it wasn't a shas milchama, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Of course it's a shas milchama. From the time of Hakamas HaMedina, the times in between wars are when our enemies are regrouping. It's when our enemies are restocking their piles of weapons. It's when they're re-strategizing about how to plan their next attack. There's never been a time where all of our Arab neighbors have been totally bishalom and okay with the existence of Medinas Yisrael. And therefore, throughout its history, it's always been a shas milchama. It turned out to be a moot point anyway, because as it turns out, the United States government does not negotiate with terrorists. So you can't just give millions of dollars to terrorists and get back your rabbi. It doesn't work that way. So there was it was a valiant effort, but a moot point anyway. I don't know, like, if, you know, when Rafutner came back, he said to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, dude, like, come on. I don't know how that conversation went, but that's not in here. But so based on all this, says Rav Shechter, Hu Adin Nami, and really Kal V'Chomer Bizman Hazeh, that Medinas Yisrael is in a matzav of milchama, and everything that happens, all of the attacks, are all an extension of that Milchemet HaShichrur in 1948. Because you don't have to look very far to hear our neighboring, our Arab neighbors say that they want Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv and Haifa v'chule v'chule. So it's the whole thing is a shas milchama, and therefore the shas milchama, the entire discussion of pikuach nefesh of an individual, that if we're going to lose a single soldier, then it's not worth it. That entire discussion is inapplicable. I would just add, Rav Shechter doesn't point this out, but I would just add, it's also completely off base. Meaning, if people think that, meaning a metzius, it's completely off base. If people think that they're going to save lives by not having a Medina, and they're going to save Jewish lives, that is, it's historically completely inaccurate. Someone just said that if you look at all of the lives that were lost in all of the wars in Israel, and all the terror attacks in Israel, there has still never been an 80-year period in Jewish history, or whatever it is, however many years since 1948, do the math, that period in Jewish history where there have been fewer Jewish lives lost to our enemies. Never in Jewish history have we lost fewer Jewish lives than we've lost since Hakamas HaMedina. Each one is terrible, each one is terrifying, each one is sad, each one is you know, like Rabbi Kamenetsky spoke about on Shabbos, is worthy of driving across the country, even if you never met them, to be Menachem Avel, and they're heroes, and all of that. But it's never happened, meaning there is no greater source of security for the Jewish people than the Medina. But Rav Shechter is saying that even if that weren't true, meaning that we don't go by the normal rules of pikuach nefesh. Now, there is a concept called a milchama in halacha. There are two types of milchama, though. There's what's called a milchamas mitzvah and a milchamas harashus. In order to have a milchamas harashus, so a lot of times people misunderstand what milchamas harashus means. People think milchamas harashus means an optional war, like if I wake up in a bad mood, you know, that's a milchamas harashus. Milchamas mitzvah is when there's a mitzvah to fight a war. Milchamas harashus is when I choose to fight a war. Now, milchamas harashus means that you need rashus from the Beis Din HaGadol, as opposed to Milchemes Mitzvah, where they don't need to take Rishus first from the Beis Din HaGadol. That it's an automatic, meaning the wars to conquer Eretz Yisrael, there's no need to have Rishus from the Beis Din HaGadol. It's automatic that we have a mitzvah in the Torah to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So based on that, it's very mistaver to say that the notion of war as it exists among the nations of the world, meaning the fact that Goyim are allowed to fight wars with each other in certain times, they only have a model called Milchemes Mitzvah. Meaning they don't have a model called Milchemes HaRashos. Why not? Because they can never have Rishus mi Beis Din HaGadol. Meaning, if let's say Ukraine and Russia are at war, it's not because Vladimir Putin went to the Beis Din HaGadol and asked, "Hey, you think it's okay if I invade the Ukraine?" That's not the way it works. Or for Ukraine to fight back, as opposed to just give up their entire land and just walk away. It's not because they went to the Beis Din HaGadol and asked Rishus. The whole concept of Melchemes Rishus doesn't apply to Umas HaOlam. The only concept of Melchama they have by Umas HaOlam is Melchemes Mitzvah. And that's what the Chasam Sofer writes in a tshuva in explaining Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin. So it's not only the Melchamos of protection, of Pikuach Nefesh, that take on the status of Melchemes Mitzvah, meaning, let's say, Russia attacks the Ukraine, and the Ukraine feels that the Russians are going to come and they're going to kill all of them. So they have to defend themselves. Instead of killing all of them, let our army fight, and we'll fight to we'll lose a lot of people along the way, but at least we'll save so many other people, we'll save so many of our civilians. It's not only when life is at stake that a nation is allowed to fight a war. Rosh Hashanah gives a mashal. He says, what were to happen if the Russians were to come to America and they would surround Washington and they would say, Washington, D.C., all we want is Washington, D.C. We come in peace. We're not interested in killing anyone. Just give us Washington, D.C. We really like these cool buildings, so we want it. And we won't kill anybody if you just walk away from Washington, D.C. And we promise, we won't kill anybody. And we believe them. They're not going to kill anybody. They just want Washington, D.C. Would the United States have an obligation to say, oh, it's not Pikuach Nefesh, you're not going to kill anybody if we walk away, and therefore, go ahead, take Washington, D.C.? No, of course not. Of course the United States would have the right to defend their own land. And Rav Schechter says, not only Washington, D.C., that he gave that as an example, even if it's a small town, even if it was Scranton or Paramus, that I don't know why he chose those two as examples, but even if it was Scranton, Pennsylvania, or Paramus, New Jersey. He grew up near Scranton, Pennsylvania, and he had a Rabbanus in Paramus for a very short period of time. So I think that there was probably a scoop in his life where he would have said, take Paramus. But even if it was Scranton or Paramus, New Jersey, or something like that, and they weren't interested in killing anyone, the United States would have a Melchemes Mitzvah on their hands to defend their land, to defend the land that belongs to them. So when we have a similar situation where a nation were to come to us and say, we want your land, and we come in peace, just give us the Medina, just give us the land, and we're not going to hurt anybody, we have a Melchemes Mitzvah to fight, to defend that land. Every other nation in the world would have a Melchemes Mitzvah, so for us it's a Melchemes Mitzvah as well. Now, in the Neturei Karta, which is obviously a known anti-Zionist organization, had taken out advertisements in newspapers at some point, heralding a Gemara in Gittin in the Churban Agaritas, Nun Vav Amar Aleph. The Gemara in Gittin tells us Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai told Abba Sikra, who was his nephew, and he was the head of the Beryonim in Yerushalayim. There were a bunch of thugs that were trying to take control of the whole situation of the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai told him that, stop fighting already. Everyone's going to die of hunger, meaning the Romans are surrounding us. They're not allowing any food in. We're all going to die. And because you're putting up a fight and you're not going out of your way to try to make peace, it's a terrible situation. And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, if you look at the Gemara there, ultimately was Matzliach to get out of Yerushalayim by playing dead, a whole story, and he managed to have a meeting with Aspasinus, with the shoes, and he told him, you're a king, and he said, you can't call me a king, whatever, learn the whole Gemara over there, it's a fascinating story, and ultimately he agreed, he gave up the Medina with the Beis HaMikdash and everything. And he was offered, you get three wishes, right? So what did he say? Tainli Yavne v'chachameha, and he wanted the Shalshalas HaMasora of the Beis HaMikdash. So he asked for whatever, for certain things, but he gave up the whole Medina. He gave up the Beis HaMikdash and everything. So you see from there that even at a time of Melchama, said the Neturei Karta, apparently you're allowed to give up the whole Medina in order to save lives, because that's what Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai did. In fact, that's what you're supposed to do. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is the hero of that story because he gave up the whole Medina. So Rav Shachter points out that that is not a raya at all. Because in that situation, there were two options. Either everyone dies and then they take the Medina, or they take the Medina and some people live. Meaning there are some wars that are not winnable. And if there's a war that is not winnable, then of course you don't fight a war that you know for sure you're going to lose. If you're going to lose the war, so then you're not allowed to cost all of those lives to fight a war. Then Yutaka would have to give up the land rather than give up all the lives and then give up the land. So one might say, therefore, who's to say what is called a victory in war? Meaning, you guys are, even I'm too young for this, but Vietnam, did the United States win the war in Vietnam? There are many that argue that the price was just too heavy. It was just too heavy a price to pay for what was accomplished in that war. So who's to determine, meaning if we boiled it down to this, that if it's a winnable war, we fight it. And if it's not a winnable war, then we don't fight it and we just give up and we're willing to walk away. Who determines what's called a winnable war or not? What's considered nefila b'milchama? What's considered nitzachon b'milchama? And that is a very important question. And in order to understand how to answer that question, Rav Shechter says, let's take a step back and let's talk about pikuach nefesh of a yachid. Let's forget about the conversation about pikuach nefesh of a country. And let's talk about what would the rule be about pikuach nefesh of a yachid. Meaning, there is a situation that comes up all the time, unfortunately, where someone is very ill, and a doctor says, I can give you medication, we can fight this, it's going to be painful, it's going to be grueling, and but we could fight, and we could squeeze another couple of months out of your life. We can get another couple of months for you on this earth. Or you could let the disease, take its course and not deal with the pain and the nausea and the and everything else and just live your last couple of weeks in peace. So the patient has that option, let's say. Things like that, choices like that happen all the time. It's what they call end-of-life decisions. It's one of the most emotionally and halachically challenging things that Rabbanim have to deal with and answer, and that families have to deal with and answer all the time, right? So what happens in that situation? What's the halacha if someone is given such a choice? Meaning, who's to say that what? Because we have national pride, we're allowed to say that we're going to fight. Maybe that's not the halacha. So Rav Shechter points out that each and every nation has a birthplace, and Eretz Yisrael is the birthplace of Klal Yisrael al pi halacha, meaning a land, a homeland. The Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Harios writes that only those Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael are included. This is a Beferish Gemara in Harios, are included in something called a group called Klal Yisrael, meaning there's a difference between having Kedushas Yisrael, being a Jew, and being part of something called Klal Yisrael. The Gemara says, to be part of Klal Yisrael, you have to live in Eretz Yisrael. And that we learn it from a pasuk in Malachim, Kahal Gadol Milavochem Asad Nachal Mitzrayim. That's the Kahal. The Kahal is only in those borders. And it has nafkamina for Paralim Davar Shel Tzibur. Right? That if the Tzibur made doesn't have Eira, so then there's a special carbon called the Paralim Davar Shel Tzibur. So what if only the Tzibur in Eretz Yisrael violated that Aveira and not in Chutz Laretz? You bring a Paralim Davar Shel Tzibur. What if most of the people in Chutz Laretz violated the Aveira but not in Eretz Yisrael? You don't bring a Paralim Davar Shel Tzibur. So the Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayis that even though obviously those mitzvahs that are noheg dafka in Eretz Yisrael that are not chovas hakarka and are not noheg in Chutz Laretz, the reason that there are certain mitzvahs that are noheg only in Eretz Yisrael is because there are certain mitzvahs that are a function of Klal Yisrael, meaning some mitzvahs are only noheg in Eretz Yisrael because they're about the land, like what? Shemitah, Trumos, Maisros, right? They're agriculture. They're about the land. Can you explain why Kiddush HaChodesh is only noeg in Eretz Yisrael? Why Egla Arufa is only noeg in Eretz Yisrael? Why Smicha is only knowing in Eretz Yisrael. Those aren't land-based mitzvahs, but those are a function of Klal Yisrael. And since Klal Yisrael, the place of Klal Yisrael, is Eretz Yisrael, so those mitzvahs only apply in Eretz Yisrael. And that, based on that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Mem Gimel Beis says that the din of Arvus only began, that Klal Yisrael Arim Zabzeh, which we spoke about the other day, only began when we passed over the Yarden, when we came into Eretz Yisrael, because that only then do we have that status of Klal Yisrael. So the life of the nation, of any nation, is taluy on the meaning is very bound up with the land that nation inhabits. And if you take away that land, that is considered to be the death of that nation. And therefore, Shechter makes a simple equation. The death, taking away the land of Israel from the Jewish people, is the equivalent of the death of an individual, right? On a national level, it is the death of a nation. It is the death of Klal Yisrael to take Eretz Yisrael away from Klal Yisrael, just like taking a person's heart is the death of an individual, is the death of an individual person. So therefore, let's take a look at what the rules are when it comes to sakanas nefashos of an individual, and then we'll figure out how to deal with whether it's worth it to leave Eretz Yisrael or to fight. Whether a war is a winnable war or not a winnable war. So the halacha by Echol Masukan, where doctors give that option that we said before, we can give you medicine, it's going to lengthen your life, but you should know it's going to be with Yisurim Noraim. It's going to be with a tremendous, tremendous pain. So there are different people that would prefer different things. Some people would prefer to live a life of comfort for as short as it may be. And some people say, I want to fight to the end. I want to fight and fight and fight for every moment I have on this earth, even if it means I'm going to live in tremendous pain. And the halacha is, according to many poskim, and certainly the way of Shachter Paskins, is that who gets to make that decision, one way or the other? The patient himself gets to make that decision. By the way, when this actually comes up, it's very tricky, because very often the patient himself is in this terrible situation, and they're trying to figure out, should we pursue this course of treatment, which is going to prolong his agony, or should we just let him go? And the real answer is, what does he want? And what's the problem with that? At that point in time, very often, he's not communicative. He cannot tell you what he wants. He's on so many pain meds, he's not able to think clearly to make such a decision. So what does the family often do in those situations? They tell you what they want, right? Either we don't want dad to leave us, we're going to fight till the very end to get every second out of it. But dad may be saying, look, I'm ready to go. But he can't say it. So the rutzon of the family is not always the rutzon of the patient himself. What you have to get down to, what you have to really, really ask the family to do in those situations is, please assess what, knowing him better than anybody else knows him, what do you think he wants? Not what do you want? Or sometimes the family would be like, we took off already like months from work, just trying to be around the clock with dad or whatever. We just need to get on with our lives already. Like, time for a funeral, and we'll, but dad may be like, hello, I still want to live. Right? You have to figure out what he would want, not what you would want. So on the national level, we have to figure out what the patient wants. And who is the patient on a national level when there are those that are attacking us and there's terror attacks and everything else? The patient is Klal Yisrael. So we have to figure out what Klal Yisrael wants. Good, so no problem. Just ask Klal Yisrael and they'll tell you exactly what they want. What would happen if you were to ask Klal Yisrael? So, it's already a joke. Two Jews, three opinions. So you get Israelis? I mean, that's you've seen how Knesset works? I mean, that doesn't go smoothly. So how do you decide, like, what Klal Yisrael actually wants? So in a time when we had a Sanhedrin, so that would be perfect. The Sanhedrin would be the voice of Klal Yisrael. even if we had a time of a gadol hadar, like Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says in Brachos Lo Hiniach Kamoso Be'eretz Yisrael, that he was able to be ma'abr shonim in Bavel, because there was no one of his level in Eretz Yisrael. He was mishichmo lemaila, bigger than anybody else. Great, then we'd be able to determine based on the gadol hadar. But we don't have that, and therefore we have to figure out what Klal Yisrael determines. But Rav Shechter points out that it's not a matter of psak halacha when we're determining whether a war is a winnable war or not. It's not a matter of psak halacha. It's a matter of expertise in knowing whether a war is a winnable war or not. Meaning, he said, mashal ma'adavar dama. Let's say you have two patients in the hospital. They both have the same illness, the same prognosis, the same choice that they're facing. One of them is a Talmud Chacham Muflag, is a Gadol B'Yisrael, and the other one's a Stam Balabas. So, do you mean to tell me that if the Talmud Chacham Muflag says, I just can't deal with the pain anymore, it's not worth it for me to pursue painful treatments, and I would just rather let the illness, that's a Psak Halacha, then the Balabas is not allowed to choose the other way? No, it's got nothing to do with the Psak Halacha. It's about what the patient wants, what's best for the patient. And therefore, this is not determined by who the Gedolei Hador are of any generation. It's determined whether a war is a winnable war or not, and how to define winning. Is winning getting every last breath of life out of me? Or is winning to at least be comfortable at the end, even if it means to die quickly? What is called winning and not winning is really dependent on those who understand milchama, those who understand war, those who understand the generals that lead the army. And therefore, if the generals believe that there's a winnable war, even with the very terrible, tragic cost of the lives of our chayalim, or the lives of some of our chayalim, that's what we have to do. And we have to take into account the ratzon of Klal Yisrael based on whether a war is a winnable war or not. And sometimes it's a slam dunk. It's an obvious choice from a military perspective that it's a winnable war. So all the Gedolei Hador in the world could be screaming, yeah, but we don't want to lose even one life. But that doesn't really make a difference at that point. Because if it's a winnable war, a nation doesn't give up its nationhood. A nation doesn't give up its land if it's something that is determined to be a winnable war. And all of this brings us now to the section on Aschalta de Geula. So Aschalta de Geula is a halachic concept. Where does Aschalta de Geula come from? So it's a Gemara. The Gemara Megillah Yudzayin and Beis tells us that Milchama Nami Aschalta de Geula hi. That Milchama is also Aschalta de Geula. L'may nafkamina, whether something is Aschalta de Geula or not, whether something is the Reishis Smichas Geula Seinu, whether something is the beginning of Geula or not. So Shachta points out two nafkaminas that you find in rabbinic literature. The Nesivos, in his commentary to the Megillah, in a sefer called Megillah Starim, writes that when you have something that seems to be Aschalta de Geula, you're allowed to be Koveya a Yom Tov. The Nesivos is obviously, it's a commentary to the Megillah. What's he bothered by? How are they allowed to be Koveya Purim as a Yom Tov? And his basic answer is, because it seemed to them at the time that Purim would be Aschalta de Geula. Was it? No, but it seemed that it would be. So since it seemed to the Chachmei Hador that this was going to be Aschalta de Geula, that gave them the license to be Koveya Yom Tov. So anything that's L'chaura, Aschalta de Geula, has Yavrishus to be Koveya Yom Tov. Second Nafkamina, from an unusual source, considering the context, the Tshuvas Minchas Elazar, Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher Rebbe, as Rav Shechter often points out, he made the Satmar Rebbe look like a Zionist, right? The Minchas Elazar was as strongly anti-Zionist as anyone could possibly be, but he passes the halacha that if you have a milchama that's a schalta de geula, that in our assessment is the beginning of the geula, you're not supposed to daven that the milchama should end prematurely. Meaning, sometimes when Israel goes and they blow up terror tunnels and whatever, and all of a sudden the world jumps up and says, stop it! Stop with all the violence! That's when they can't take it anymore. So do we pray for a ceasefire in those situations? So if you believe it's an aschalta de geula, you pray for them to finish the job. you pray for the war to meet its natural conclusion that it should meet, as opposed to being stopped prematurely. Because if we believe this is the Gula process, says the Minchas Elazar, you're not allowed to try to abort the Gula process midway. So now we just have to figure out, okay, if I want to know whether something is a Schalta de Gula, I need to know what's called Gula, right? So that's also somewhat clear. The Ramban writes in his Hakdama to Sefer Shemos that Sefer Shemos is called the Sefer HaGeula. So the Ramban says, but that seems crazy, because at the end of Sefer Shemos, we're not in Eretz Yisrael. You know what Sefer HaGeula should be? Sefer Yoshua should be Sefer HaGeula. Only when we get to Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban writes that no, Geula is not defined by arrival in Eretz Yisrael. Geula is defined by Binyan HaMikdash. And at the end of Sefer Shemos, we have a Binyan HaMishkan, a place of Ashras HaShchina in this world. That is Geula, and that's why Sefer Shemos is called Sefer HaGeula. So now the Ramban has defined for us Geula. Geula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So what is Aschalta de Geula? How can we say Melchama is Aschalta de Geula? How can we identify something as Aschalta de Geula? So that's also a Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Dav Chaf Amud Beis tells us that there are three mitzvos that Klal Yisrael is commanded in when we enter Eretz Yisrael. Number one, Lahamid Lahamelech, to establish a Jewish government. Number two, Lahachra Zaru Shel Amalek, to destroy the descendants of Amalek. And number three, Livnol Sam Beis HaBechira. And the Gemara says it has to be Keseder Azeh. It derives from Sukkim. It needs to be in this order. First, you establish a Jewish government. Step two is you destroy Amalek. Step three is you build a Beis HaMikdash. So essentially, the Gemara is laying out for us a process, a three-step process that culminates with what? With what? Beis HaMikdash, which is, in the Ramban's words, Geula. So if I know what Geula is, and I know that there's a three-step process to get to Geula, wouldn't it be logical to assume that the first step in that process is Aschalta de Geula, is the Reishis, Smichas Geula Seinu, is the beginning of Geula. And therefore, as long as we're at a stage of Lahamid Lahamelech, then that would be Aschalta de Geula. So the Ramban, in his Hasagos to the Sefer HaMitzvos of in Mitzvah Seydalid, wonders why the Rambam doesn't list the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in his Minyan HaMitzvos. And Rosh Hashanah points out that the Rambam probably didn't list it as a mitzvah of Yerashim HaSav because it's the same as the mitzvah of Hamadas Melech. That in the Rambam's view, probably the mitzvah of Hamadas Melech means to establish a Jewish government, which is the same as Yerashim HaSav. Meaning, Hamadas Melech doesn't mean, there are certain dinim of Melech that only apply to a monarch, like Lo Yarbelo Nashim and Susim and, you know, things like that. That you have a Sefer Torah. Those things are about a melech, about the gavra of a melech. But a malchus, a melech also means a malchus. And there are other halachos, such as Yerusha Sa'aretz, which is the same as Lahamad Lahamelech, meaning the din of Hamadas Melech that we are obligated in as a nation means to establish a Jewish government. And there are big nafkaminas about that. Because if a government is an invalid government, if it's a pirate government, if it's not a viable government, then the currency that it prints is not viable currency. The currency that it mints is not viable currency. And that is a big nafkamina in terms of being podem maaser sheni. Meaning, if you really held that the current government in Israel is a pirate government, does not have a din of a malchus, then the halacha would be that you wouldn't be allowed to use shekels to be podem maaser sheni, which no one holds. Meaning, all the gedolei poskim assume you're allowed to use shekels to be podem maaser sheni because it does have a din of a government. So it therefore stands to reason, and I'm no longer going line by line because we're holding by Marav already. But it therefore stands to reason that the gedder of Aschalta de Geula means when we establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, we can say with confidence that Lahamid Lahamelech happened in 1948. And that is therefore the Reishis Tzmichas Geulaseinu. Now, what we haven't yet answered is, Mehechitesi. Maybe we'll establish this government, and then Chas v'Shalom, this government will, we're going to lose Israel, which was Satmar Rebbe's big fear, is that all the Jews are going to be gathered to Israel, then our enemies are going to know where we all are and attack us all at once, and we'll all be wiped out, and we're going to lose Israel, and then in 500 years from now, we'll get it back, and that will be the Aschalta de Gula. Like, how do I know that this is going to lead to Gula? Maybe the process is going to have to start all over again. So that's what he deals with later on in the piece. We're not, we're only about halfway done, so there's a lot more to do, but I don't know if we're going to have time to do it. So, good night to read. Worthwhile to read.